This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Edmund O'Brien as...
Johnny Dollar.
Mr. Dollar, this is Miss Beale at the travel office calling back. I got your plane space, all right.
Oh, good. Wait till I get a pencil. Okay.
You leave Idlewild tomorrow morning at 9 on National Flight 405, and you reach New Orleans tomorrow evening at 5:01.
5:01. Got it.
You'll have to stay in New Orleans overnight, and the earliest flight I could get out of there is Pan America number 701 the next morning at 8.
8 o'clock.
That'll put you in Managua at 5:50 that evening, and there's a train from there to San Juan del Sur.
Oh, that part of it should be fun.
The fare one way, including tax, is $216.55. Why don't you buy a round trip?
Well, just habit, I guess. Superstition. I don't like to presume I'm going to get back from any of these trips I make. That'd really be asking for trouble.
Edmund O'Brien in another adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Britannia Life Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the David Rocky matter. Expense account item one, $4.50, transportation from Hartford to New York City. Item two, $1.20, cab fare to the hiring hall of the National Maritime Union.
Tom.
I talked with you on the phone, Mr. Richter. Dollar?
Oh, yeah. Well, like I told you then, your man is in San Juan del Sur. Or if he left, we don't know about it.
I hope he's there. I've got plane reservations.
I called the Edwardson line. That's the outfit he was sailing for. I want to double check on our records, and theirs are the same. He missed his sailing in San Juan del Sur, and they signed on a local man as far as Panama.
The ship was Delisle Edwardson?
That's it.
Can you give me anything that would help identify him?
Well, here's his signature and his last job assignment card.
Can I keep this?
Yeah. I guess so, sure.
Thanks.
Let's see, here's his membership book number, 146544.
All right. Would you happen to have any photographs in your file?
No, but the Coast Guard office would, on his certificate of identification and certificate of service. They'll both be in a file on him over there.
Good, that's what I need. I wouldn't know him if I did find him.
I'll fix you up. Naturally, I'm curious, you flying all the way down to that port. What do you want with this David Rocky? Mind telling me?
He just became a millionaire.
What?
Well, when Rocky was a kid, he was adopted by a Titus Morgan in Boston. Wealthy man. He just died, leaving everything to Rocky.
How do you like that?
$1.5 million, including $50,000 in insurance. That put me on the case.
How would you like to get some news like that?
I don't think I could take it. Well, thanks a lot, Mr. Rick.
That was nothing. Yeah, when you find this guy, ask him if he can spare a few bucks for the seaman's home, will you?
From the Coast Guard documents on David Rocky, I memorized his picture, and the next morning, I left New York. Expense account item three, $297, fare and incidentals to Managua. Item four, $35, a charter plane I finally arranged for the next day that put me in San Juan del Sur at 3 o'clock the next afternoon. I found hotel accommodations and then looked up the local office of David Rocky's last employers, the Edwardson Steamship Lines.
What's this? Oh. Good afternoon.
Hello. My name is Dollar. I just arrived from Hartford, Connecticut.
Well, well, well. My name is Wall. Clayton Wall. How do you do?
Mr. Wall?
Why on earth would anyone leave Hartford to come to a place like this?
I'm an insurance investigator. I was sent down here to find a seaman who sailed on one of your ships, David Rocky. Remember him?
Oh, yes. Certainly I remember him. Did you say insurance investigator?
That's right. Why did you ask that?
Why, just wondered. What do you want with him?
He has some money coming from a policy and an estate.
Oh. I think I'd go back to Hartford, Mr. Dollar.
Why?
David Rocky is not in a position to hear about money up in the States.
Oh?
He's in jail. He's being charged with murder.
Oh, I see. When did this happen?
Well, I'm afraid I don't have all the particulars. The papers, they aren't famous here for accurate reporting. But he missed his ship, you know. That was not quite 2 weeks ago.
Yes, I've been told that.
I believe the reason was a drinking bout. And as a result of it, this employee of ours, a Nicaraguan, was killed. Stabbed to death, I believe.
Why didn't anybody know about this in New York? His union or your company?
Things move very slowly down here.
Well, you must be in contact with your New York office.
My communications are of a purely business nature, Mr. Dollar. I suppose that sounds rather inhumane.
Yes, matter of fact, it does.
This office handles many thousands of dollars each year for the company, and I have to protect its position.
You mean that's why you didn't report this trouble of Rocky's?
And if I had, it would have meant interference with the officials.
And that wouldn't have been good for you?
It would not. One who wants to continue in business here doesn't interfere with the Guardia Nacional. It is both military and police. And like in all countries, they have legal procedures.
I take it you haven't seen Rocky since he was arrested?
No, I haven't.
Well, I hope you don't mind if I do.
I'll be blunt with you. As long as the interference doesn't stem from this office, I think it's highly in order. I wish you luck, Mr. Dollar. And I'd like to have you tell me how you come out. I'm not as heartless as I sound.
No, sure, sure. Just a good businessman. Before I tackled them, I learned what I could about the police setup in Nicaragua. The Guardia had been organized originally by American Army and Marine officers. A lot of what I dug up would have been good news to criminals, a couple of thousand men enforcing laws in the country of the size of New York State. But at least it looked like I'd find somebody who could speak English. I did, but that was all there was in my favor.
You cannot talk to him. He's a prisoner and I will not have people talk to him.
Why not, Sergeant? Why don't you want me to see him?
It's for me to say. That is my order.
You're an important man, I understand that, but there are some who are more important.
What do you say?
You're evidently used to dealing with people who are afraid of you. I don't have any reason to be afraid of you.
Importance? I do not understand. And fear?
I'm here under the proper papers. They give me certain rights. David Rocky was under papers, too. He has rights. Does he have a lawyer?
He does not want one.
That's difficult to believe.
You think I lie?
I think you'd better let me go see him.
No. He's a prisoner.
Prisoner or not, he has a right to see me. I'll go to the American consul in Managua if I have to. You must know where he'll go, to your superior officers. You can't do this because of personal feelings, Sergeant.
You stay 10 minutes, no more.
Thanks. Maybe that'll be enough.
Who is it?
Can you have a light?
No. Who is it?
My name is Dollar, Rocky. I came down from the States to find you.
That's a laugh. I know how these things go. They haven't even heard about it up there, so why should anybody come looking for me?
Titus Morgan died.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. What does that have to do with it?
He left you a little money, some insurance. Company wanted to find you so they could clear their books.
Is this a fact?
Yeah. What about this murder charge?
If you've been outside, you know more about it than I do. This is where I woke up, and this is where I've been. I don't know what's going on.
What do you mean, this is where you woke up?
I got drunk. I don't remember getting here.
You know about the murder charge?
Oh, yeah, they told me about that.
What happened?
I don't know. I drank too much. It almost seems like I got a Mickey.
Did you kill this guy?
Are you on the level?
Certainly I am. Here, hold my wallet while I get a knife. That's my operating license. My cards are inside.
Connecticut. It's close to home. I'm sorry I was so suspicious, but you could have been working for the police, coming in here to give me some false hope and make me blab.
What about the killing?
I don't remember. I don't know what happened. His name was Sagasa. He was foreman of the longshoreman crew that loaded us.
I know that.
Well, I didn't have to stand watch that night, so I went with him. I've done it before. I knew. There were all these drinks at his place finally with his wife. I remember midnight, but not much after that. Except half remembering going to bed because I was so stiff.
You went to bed there?
I'm not even sure of that. I think so. I don't remember going anyplace else. And believe me, I've been trying to.
What then?
I don't know. Almost like a nightmare. I can remember the police being there. In the morning, I was here. And that Sergeant Ortega won't tell me what's going on or let me see anybody. I don't even know how he was killed.
You've been stabbed. He was lying on the floor in the middle of the front room.
I wouldn't have any reason to kill Emiliano.
You remember who was with you?
Yeah, there was his wife, as I said.
What's her name?
Misha.
Tell me about her.
Well, there's nothing about her. She's Sagasa's wife. After I met him, I met her. I've made this port quite a few times and got to know them both.
Mm-hmm. Who else was with you?
Two other men. One was Dave Light. He was a crew member of the ship, so he's gone. The other is Chris Binstead. He's in charge of the warehouses here for the Edwards and Company. Then there was another girl, Alicia. I don't know where she came from.
I'll find out.
You're really going to look into it?
Yeah. I don't see an American sitting here in a black cell without somebody helping him.
I won't say I've been praying, but if I had been, you'd sure be the answer to them.
I'll let you know what I find out.
And Mr. Morgan died.
That's right.
He was a great man. I wish I'd stayed home.
I'll try to see you tomorrow night. Hey, let me out. I couldn't see him. The cell was that dark. But when the door clanged shut behind me, I realized the irony of the situation. The heir to $1.5 million fortune in a jail cell in Nicaragua, without rights, privileges, or even light.
We will return you to the second act of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Every Saturday night, Americans from coast to coast play Sing It Again. Do you? Well, if you don't know the fun and excitement you're missing. Prizes galore, plus a special jackpot prize if you can name the phantom voice. So stay at home, play at home on Saturday nights, when over many of the same CBS stations, Dan Seymour says it's Sing It Again. Now, with our star, Edmund O'Brien, we return you to the second act of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now you saw the prisoner, don't trouble me no more.
He told me he wouldn't have any reason to kill the man, Sergeant.
That's what he said.
And that he doesn't remember killing him.
That's what he said, too, and why?
He says he was drunk, yes. But he remembers other things, like the police being there. Seems to me he'd remember killing somebody.
Why you think he'd tell the truth if he do remember?
It just seems to me that he was telling the truth.
You are too innocent, senor.
Maybe. But I'd like to know what you've got on him.
I do not understand.
Well, what are you building your case on? Just the fact that he says he doesn't remember? He says he'd have no reason to kill Emiliano. What motive are you using?
Motive? The wife.
You mean there was something between Rocky and the wife?
To herself, she is a cat, and all men, they are mice for her.
All right, that's something. There wouldn't be enough in my country.
No?
That's nothing but the vaguest kind of circumstantial evidence. Don't you have anything real? The murder weapon, for example?
It was not found.
What about the fatal wounds, then? What kind of a knife made them, do you think?
It was a wide knife.
Uh-huh. As a seaman, Rocky could have been carrying a knife, but it would have been a small one. Do you think of that?
We search him. He did not have a knife. He threw it away.
How do you know he threw it away?
He did not have it. You believe in his lies. I tell you what the people say who were with him.
I don't want to hear your version of what they said. I'll talk to them myself.
No, you do not. You do not interfere.
Look, as far as you're concerned, he's guilty until he can be proved innocent. And you don't want anybody to try and do that. Now, don't try to stop me, Sergeant. If you don't want your superiors on your neck.
You'll be in trouble, too. You aren't careful.
My first move was to get a cable off to Hartford advising the company of the situation and suggesting that the Titus Morgan estate send a lawyer to San Juan del Sur as quickly as possible.
By then, it was 5 p.m. Through Clayton Wall in the Edwardson office, I found the address of the Sagasa widow, one in a section of houses that the company had improved for their employees. Mrs. Sagasa was an attractive, unusually fair-skinned woman of maybe 23 or 4, who was outside enjoying the moist wind of evening when I arrived. She, too, spoke English.
The company taught me. I work there.
Oh, it seems to be a good company. Does a lot for its sound people.
Sometimes I think it is good. But then sometimes I think it would be better never to know any Americans. But they bring me many presents from America.
David Rocky and who else?
The other sailor from the ship. The one named David.
Light?
Yes, that one too. And one called Robert.
What did your husband say about all these presents? Didn't he mind?
Only sometimes he was angry. He would say, "You are my wife. You don't take these things." And I'd say, "Yes, Emiliano. I'm your wife. And these things don't change that." And he would smile and was not angry anymore.
Was he angry about David Rocky?
Sometimes.
You know he's in jail, don't you?
Yes, I know.
Did you see him kill your husband?
No.
I understand you were here.
Yes, I was here with Alicia. We came out here. It was hot inside.
Oh. And the men were still inside, huh? Dave Light and Rocky and your husband?
Yes.
And there was one other, wasn't there? What was his name, Binstead?
Yes, Chris Binstead.
Did you hear anything from out here?
Well, no, only talking.
All of them talking?
I think so.
David Rocky thinks he remembers lying down while he was here.
I think he stood up.
He was up when you came out of your house?
Yes, I think so. It was... Well, there was a lot of rum.
Yes, I know. Had there been any trouble? Any arguments?
No, I don't think so.
Don't you remember?
There was only trouble when Chris ran out. Then Emiliano said...
What did Chris say?
He said, "Dave, he caught Emiliano."
Dave who?
Only Dave.
Could he have meant Dave Light?
I don't know.
Was Dave Light still in the house?
No, he was gone to bring the guardia.
Look, it's very important that I learn all the truth about what happened. The guardia have made up their minds that David Rocky killed your husband. If he did, he'll be punished. But if he didn't, that's got to be proved. I came here to tell him that, well, that he had a new life to live.
New life? What does this mean, his new life?
David Rocky is a rich man in America now.
Rich man?
Do you know how much $1 million is?
No.
Well, it's more than you or your children or your grandchildren could ever spend here in San Juan. David Rocky has more than that now. He doesn't know. I came here to tell him about it. But when I found out about your husband, I didn't.
Oh, no. He would surely curse God if you told him.
You understand now why I have to learn the truth, don't you?
Yes.
All right. Then will you take me into your house and try to remember everything that happened before you and Alicia went outside? Another Edwardson ship had docked that evening, and I found Chris Binstead on the wharf supervising the placement of the cargo that was streaming into the warehouse. He didn't want to, but he turned his job over to a helper and led me up some stairs to his office in the loft of the building.
I don't quite get you being down here. You said Dave Rocky came into some money, huh?
Yeah, a little. From an insurance policy.
Somebody in the family?
He didn't have any family.
That's what I thought. He never talked about having a home or anything. Did you get in to see him?
Yeah, I saw him. It's a whale of a spot he's in.
Yeah. I feel sorry for him, but what else can you expect?
Did you see him kill Sagasa, Chris?
Yeah. And I don't want to see anything like that again.
What happened exactly?
Well, the whole thing was that everybody'd been drinking too much. He passed out and laid down on a cot. If he'd stayed there, everything would have been all right. But Misha, she's nothing but a package of trouble anyway. She had to go over and try to wake him up. She said something that got her husband started.
What do you mean, started?
Yeah, riled up, you know, something personal. So he goes over and dumps Rocky on the floor and tells him to get out and not come back. Rocky hit him once and then went out in the kitchen, got the knife, came back.
Misha told me she was outside.
Yeah, she was. I sent both the women out when the trouble started.
She said there hadn't been any trouble.
She knows better than that.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I can't see why she'd lie.
I never figured them out, any of them. Anyway, Rocky came back with a knife, and they called each other some names, and then all of a sudden there was Emiliano on the floor.
Then what?
Yeah, that was the end of it. Went and told Misha what had happened. Dave Light went after the Guardia.
What did you say to Misha?
Oh, I just told her that Rocky had killed her husband.
She says you told her Dave did, that you didn't say Rocky.
Well, maybe I did say Dave, but I meant Dave Rock. What are you pressing me for?
I'm just trying to find out what happened.
I told you what happened.
How about this Dave Light? How come he was able to climb aboard his ship and leave?
Yeah, he reported the thing. Mr. Wall at the main office talked to the Guardia. They let him go. What is all this, Dollar? You got the facts.
It's funny that David Rocky doesn't remember killing him.
Is that what he says? He doesn't remember?
A man who does a thing like that when he's blind drunk is usually following his subconscious mind. That would mean that when he's sober, he probably would have thought about killing Emiliano.
So?
That would mean that the motive might be the elimination of the husband. Now, I can't figure a seaman who's here in San Juan only a few days at a time even thinking of going to these lengths to get rid of Misha's husband.
What are you driving at, Dollar?
I'm thinking out loud, I guess. Why?
That'd better be all.
I guess you have to get back to work. Hmm?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot for seeing me. It was coal black when I left and made my way on foot back to my hotel. A message was waiting for me at the desk. Please phone Mr. Clayton Wall.
Oh, Mr. Dollar, I've been waiting for you to call.
Yes, Mr. Wall, what is it?
The widow, Misha, came to my house. She wanted to get in touch with you.
That's funny, I gave her my hotel.
You were out and she couldn't find you.
All right, maybe that's it. What does she want?
She didn't tell me, but she'll be at her house and would like to have you come there.
All right, I'll go right over.
Dennis?
Mr. Dollar.
Why you don't come before this?
Well, I was busy asking questions. I saw Chris Binstead.
What did he say?
Hard to tell the lies from the alcoholic confusion.
I don't understand you.
I don't understand it either, Misha. Well, why'd you want to see me?
I found a knife.
Oh? Where?
Behind that...
That chest?
Yes. There. I didn't touch it.
Why wasn't it found before?
The Guardia, they didn't look.
How did you happen to find it?
I don't know. After you leave, I started to think, and something told me look there.
Now tell me the truth, Misha.
I tell the truth.
You want to help David Rocky?
If I can help.
All right. Then don't say anything about finding the knife. Not to anybody.
I don't tell.
You didn't tell Mr. Wall?
He asked me, but I don't tell.
All right, leave it that way. Don't say anything to anybody. I slept after that, almost the first sleep I'd had since I left New York. And the first thing the next morning, I arranged for another charter plane to Managua. In it, I sent the murder weapon and the only other thing I could think of that carried David Rocky's fingerprints. My wallet that he'd held while I showed him my identification. After a meal that passed for breakfast, I packed to see him.
I might have been going crazy in here. What have you found out?
Not much. Some of it good, some bad. We'll have to wait until this afternoon to do any more.
Seems like this is a hangover I'm never going to get over. The times I haven't been going crazy, I've been thinking of Mr. Morgan. How did he die?
Heart.
He wasn't very old. I keep remembering what he said when I left, that there were two Earls and that I was picking the wrong one. He adopted me, you know.
Yeah. I talked to his lawyers, but I didn't get the whole story.
It doesn't make any difference, I guess, except I could have made him a lot happier than I did. He had a son of his own that got killed in an auto accident when he was 14. The mother, too.
I didn't know that.
I was the same age, and I was supposed to take his son's place. Mr. Morgan found me in a state home, took me in. Gave me everything, put me through school, high school.
Why did you leave him?
Guess I'd lived too long in the other world or something. I always felt like an outsider. Then the war came along, and I went into the Merchant Marine.
How old are you now, Rocky?
27. I went back after the war, but I wasn't cut out for it, I guess. Tuxedos and formal dinners and dames I didn't understand. The rest of the people who never seemed to say what they were thinking.
Yeah, there are plenty of those.
I tried because I knew Mr. Morgan wanted me to. There was just something rough in me that I couldn't hold down. And there were a couple of things with these stuffed shirts, you know, fights. Finally, a few years back, I got up and left without saying anything to Mr. Morgan.
I got no sermon to preach.
I know it wasn't the way to do it. And he left me some insurance anyway. How do you like that guy?
Have you been thinking about the Sagasa thing, Rocky?
I've been trying.
You can't remember any more?
No. Does it look bad?
I can't tell about these other people.
I wouldn't have killed him. Misha's trouble, I know that, but I wouldn't have killed him. I didn't have any reason to.
That's been my approach, but I haven't proved anything with it. You sit tight until I come back. Oh, here. Brought you some cigarettes. I got an answer that morning on my cable to Hartford. The Morgan estate was sending a lawyer. Then I waited until the middle of the afternoon when a charter plane came back from Managua with the results of the fingerprint tests. There was only one place to go.
Dollar?
Why didn't you give me a straight story at the beginning, Rocky?
What do you mean?
Why didn't you tell me you killed him?
Did I kill him?
You know you did.
No, I swear I don't. I don't remember.
You mean that, don't you?
I don't remember, Mr. Dollar. I don't remember. Did I kill him?
Didn't you ever think of getting Sagasa out of the way?
Yeah. He was in the way. Did I kill him?
I've been looking for evidence that would say you didn't. What I found says you did.
What?
Your fingerprints on the knife, and no other fingerprints at all. They couldn't have been faked. There was only one way to get them there.
Boy, I'm sorry.
So am I.
I didn't mean to. I had no reason to. Why did I?
Things happen, I guess. Could happen to anybody who doesn't have any more sense than I do. I got nobody to blame. Nobody.
Expense account, item 5, same as items 3 and 4, transportation back to Hartford. Item 6, miscellaneous, $235. Expense account total, $840.75. Remarks? I'm sorry the mission wasn't more successful. The estate lawyer arrived before I left, and although he wasn't familiar with Nicaraguan courts, he felt that David Rocky had a chance on a second-degree murder plea. None of us knew what the terms would be. But we did know that $1.5 million was worth waiting for. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars Edmund O'Brien in the title role and is written by Gil Dowd with music by Wilbur Hatch. Edmund O'Brien's latest picture is the Paramount Pictures production, The Redhead and the Cowboy. Featured in tonight's cast were Lillian Baeff, Bill Conrad, Tyler McVeigh, Edgar Barrier, Jay Novello, and Jack Moyles. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle. This is Dick Cutting inviting you to join us next week at this time when Edmund O'Brien returns as...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Their Saturday night fun with the young married set when Lucille Ball and her favorite husband come along later this evening on most of these same CBS stations. You'll enjoy the laughs with Lucille Ball as she tries to help, but more often hinders the man she calls my favorite husband. And now, stay tuned for Von Monroe's Caravan, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, where Hopalong Cassidy rides every Saturday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
got a mate with lovely shoes a girl can't lose. In gallon camp she'll rate.
More miles to a gallon camp. Yes, gallon camps, the family shoe stores with the yellow fronts. The largest shoe chain in the West, with stores from Canada to Mexico to serve the West. GALLENKAMPS, Gallon Camps present Pat Novak for Hire.
Sure, I'm Pat Novak for Hire. That's what the sign out in front of my office says. Pat Novak for Hire. Down on the waterfront in San Francisco, you always bite off more than you can chew. It's tough on your windpipe, but you don't go hungry. Down here, a lot of people figure it's better to be a fat guy in a graveyard than a thin guy in a stew. That way, you can be sure of a tight fit. Oh, I rent boats and do anything else that makes a sound like money. It works out all right if your mother doesn't mind you coming home for Christmas in a box. I found that out Wednesday night, about 9 o'clock. I closed the shop early and I came home to read. Well, it wasn't a bad book, if you ever wanted to start a forest fire. It was one of those historical things, and the girl in it was just getting her second wind and her third man when the door to my apartment opened and the place began to get crowded. From where I sat, the crowd looked good. She sauntered in, moving slowly from side to side like 118 pounds of warm smoke. Her voice was all right, too. Reminded you of a furnace full of marshmallows.
Good evening.
Yeah, thanks for knocking.
I don't think you mind my coming in without warning.
No, I get the cabbage smell from next door the same way.
Does it pay to be that polite, Mr. Novak?
Saves you the trouble of saying please. What's on your mind?
That bottle in front of you. Will you pour me a drink?
No. You'll save dough if you look up a bartender.
All right. I came to use you instead of your whiskey anyway.
Talk.
My name is Lee Underwood. I'll give you $300 to do something for me. It'll only take an hour.
That's too much dough, unless it's murder. And if it is murder, it's not enough dough.
Are you afraid?
I just don't like paid murder, I told you. When you get caught, the pain gets expensive.
If it were murder, I'd do it myself. Mr. Novak, I want you to frighten someone for me.
Why don't you hire a friend? Are they too pretty?
It's a man named Dixie Gillian. You'll find him in an office down on Folsom Street, at this address. I promise nothing will happen to you.
That's what they told Billy Kahn.
He'll be in this office until 11 tonight. I want you to go in and see him. Tell him you're from Adrian, and that he's to get out of town by tomorrow noon.
Suppose he wants to put it off.
He won't. Don't let him know who hired you. Just tell him Adrian said to leave.
Yeah. You better go home. For 300 bucks, I won't buy a tissue paper plot. Now tell me more or say goodbye.
There's not much more I can tell you, except there won't be any trouble. He's a rotten little beast, and I want him frightened badly.
Why?
He's been bothering my sister.
Why doesn't he bother you?
Because I bother back too fast. Do you want the 300, Mr. Novak?
Yeah, it's going to be a long winter. Put it on the table.
Good. And you'll need this, too.
No, you keep it. I don't want a gun.
It's empty, don't worry. See? No shells. It's perfectly safe.
Now, look, I've got a nasty disposition. You can rent that for 300 bucks, but if you want more, find a gunsel or an off-duty copper, will you?
I don't want you to be a gunsel. That's why I want you to use this gun. I know it's empty. If you use it on Dixie, he'll scare fast. It's just a way to save some breath.
All right, it's your 300.
You better go now.
Yeah. Wait till I get a coat. If your doorbell rings, don't play mouse.
Oh?
Because I may look you up.
Am I too young to ask why?
Because if anything goes wrong, I'll be around looking for you. From there on, it won't be nice. I'll dirty you up like a locker room towel.
Relax, Patsy. You'll never learn to fall in love that way.
She handed me the gun and walked out of my apartment. Seeing her leave made you feel like Frank Buck losing an argument. She walked with a nice, easy swing of a satisfied leopard, and for a small leopard, she had pretty good spots, too. I put the gun in my overcoat pocket, and I went down to Folsom Street. The address was down near the bridge entrance, and the street was deserted except for a couple of winos near the corner trying to buy back 1926 at a dollar a jug. I stopped in front of the place. It was a machinery company. I could see a light burning in the back. I began to walk through the place. It was so quiet you could hear a worm with whooping cough, and there were enough shadows around to keep a ghost happy for years. When I got to the office back in the corner, through the glass, I could see a man sitting at the desk. When I opened the door, and walked in. He didn't seem surprised.
Come on in, mister. You're bad on noise.
Yeah?
That's right. You make too much for a thief and not enough for a customer. What do you want?
About 10 words if you're Dixie Gillian.
Go ahead.
You better look up a timetable.
What makes you that tough?
This.
Oh. Why do you look tougher with a gun? Does it make you talk faster?
I'm going to say it slow, mister. Pack up your rompers and get out.
Is that you talking or somebody else?
I'm just the guy with a gun. Adrian does the talking.
And he says get out.
That's right. You've got the whole message now.
All right, you told me. So wander out and spend your dough.
I will.
You'll need part of it, though, because I'm going to give you an answer for Adrian. I'm going to take that gun away from you, mister. You can pick the pieces out of your head on the way home.
You better stand back or I'll share it with you.
You got your offer, mister. Let's see you make good.
Save your muscle,
drop
fella.
Drop that gun, will you?
Save your muscle,
gun.
Fella. The gun's
drop
empty.
The gun. Somebody fooled us, mister.
Sometimes you can get a home run with a half swing. That's the way it was this time. He couldn't have made it with a prayer book in both hands. He slid down to the floor and trembled for a moment and then flattened out like a leaf in a pool of water. Just before he died, he grabbed his side as if he didn't like the way it hurt, and then he didn't care. I rolled him on his back and let him look at the ceiling. His eyes were open and he looked surprised, like a guy who didn't figure on a change in the weather. There was a scar that ran across his forehead and dug deep into his hairline. And he was lying there with a bunch of pink gum showing as if he was trying to pick up a few bucks with a toothpaste ad. I didn't have time to tell him how sorry I was, because if homicide caught me here, I'd have about as much chance as a canary in a basement full of cats. I started for the door. Right then, I knew I could start ordering birdseed. It was Hellman. And he walked over to have a look at the body.
Hello, Novak. The guy looks embarrassed.
Yeah, I guess he is, Hellman.
What's he doing dead?
Putting in a beef somewhere, I guess. He rates it.
He'll like you for that, Novak. How did it happen?
A team play. We worked it out together.
But you've got the gun.
That's right. I got the gun.
You feel like a bet?
No. Just keep stealing the old way.
You know how I feel, Novak?
Yeah, you feel flabby to anybody else, but to yourself, I suppose you feel good. Now, look, I walked in here with a gun. There was some quick fight talk, and I killed him, but it's still not a good rap.
I can get a long price on it for you, Novak.
I'll bet you can, Hellman. You can give me a bad deal, but part of the time, it'll be from the other side of the deck.
Worse than that, Novak. It'll be all the time, and I want to watch it because I think you're going to be a crybaby.
I'm going to scream, if that's what you mean, Hellman. I'm going to scream about a gal that sent me in here with an empty gun.
That's a big hole for a cap pistol, Novak.
I got a last-minute curve. It was empty once.
Yeah. That's the only way they make a gun, Novak. I don't want you for an hour ago. I want you for this dead guy on the floor.
All right, all right. I told you I didn't come in here to kill the guy. I don't know him. He may even be a good guy. I'm sorry he's dead.
All right, Novak. Just wait a few weeks, and you can tell him personally.
Hellman had me up against the rail, and he knew it. When we left there, he was wearing a big, toothy smile. It was big enough to sew in his ears. He called the coroner, and he told him to pick up the stiff, and then we rode downtown. He dropped the gun into ballistics, and he hauled me into his office. The reporters were there. He gave them the whole story and told them how to spell Hellman. After that, we wound up at the desk, and he booked me on suspicion of murder. The next hour and a half was the kind of stuff they don't write about in the paper. They call it interrogation. When you're finished, you've been through a lot of tight spots, like a piece of bubble gum and a set of false teeth. About 11 o'clock, Hellman brought me into his office, and from there on, it happened kind of fast.
I just talked to the DA. He's going to streamline things for you.
Well, he's going to look funny, going to trial on a guy you can't identify.
I won't press you. I don't have to, Novak. I've got the only parley I need. You, the dead guy, and a big, fat murder gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hellman talking. Yeah, I know it was a 38. That crazy down in ballistics, I saw him standing over the dead guy. Well, they must have made a mistake, that's all. No, I don't want him in here. I don't want him in here. Hey, Tony. Tony, I...
You're getting pale. You need some more rouge, Hellman.
I got some bad news, Inspector.
Well, keep it, or you'll take more home to your wife. I'll talk to you later.
No, talk to him now, Hellman. If the bullet doesn't match the gun, talk to him now.
That's right, Inspector. A 38 bullet, but it won't match the gun you brought in.
It's got a match. I came in and found him standing there. He admits it.
It's a neat trick, then. If he fired the bullet out of that gun, he retooled it in midair.
I'm not that fast, Hellman. Get out of that chair so you'll have room to squirm.
You keep still, Novak.
Oh, I won't bother you. I'm going home.
Huh?
I'm walking out of your jail, Hellman. You got a broken-down 38 that won't fit anything but your thumbs. You can't hold me on that.
I found you over the body. I can hold you on suspicion of murder.
But it'll hurt tomorrow morning, Hellman. The papers will be down here for a follow-up. And you'll have to tell them what it looks like out in left field.
I'll handle them.
You can't afford to let them start laughing at you. People will get the idea it's your face.
You can save Carfare if you stay right here.
because I'll have you back by noon tomorrow.
You're not that good, Hellman. You couldn't hold a moth with a searchlight. The town ought to thank you.
Eh?
Oh, it's a nice jail, Hellman, and with you around, it'll last for years.
We'll return to Pat Novak in a moment. You're going to put extra warmth and comfort in your Christmas wishes this year. How do I know? Well, because I've seen the Gallen Camp Christmas Gift Slipper Collection. You know, everybody's talking about it as the gayest, brightest idea on the gift shopping horizon. When you visit your neighborhood Gallen Camp store, well, then you'll know why. There you'll find slippers for every member of the family, soft and cuddly warm ski capers for Sis, handsome embroidered Chinese slippers for Mom, warm, shearling-lined opera slippers for Brother, and good-looking, smooth kid opera slippers for Dad's fireside loafing. Yes, and there are appealingly soft and gorgeously colored shearling scuffs to delight the heart of any young lady from 16 to 60, and slippers for the little nippers. All are irresistibly comfortable, good-looking, and irresistibly Gallen Camp price. Go to Gallen Camp's, the store with the yellow front near you, to buy Christmas gift slippers that'll say Merry Christmas in a heartwarming way. Give more smiles with a Gallen Camp slipper gift. And now back to Pat Novak.
When I walked out of headquarters, I had a nice mess to juggle. It was like trying to walk the baby on a floor full of marbles. If things didn't add up for Hellman, they weren't doing any better for me. I knew the gun I had went off. If it did, what happened to the bullet? Where did the other one come from? Why weren't there two shots? Oh, I couldn't put my finger on a thing and nothing added up. It was like trying to follow a grain of rice in a Shanghai suburb. I looked up Lee Underwood's address and I went by her apartment. A girl downstairs told me she worked at a nightclub out on the Bayshore Highway. Well, I had a couple of places to hit, so I looked up the only honest guy I know. An ex-doctor and a boozer by the name of Jocko Madigan. A good man until he began to figure the last drink in a bottle is just as easy to get as the first. Well, I found him in a little leather-trimmed sink on Powell Street. It was a grimy little hole where they washed the glasses once a week in stale beer, but Jocko was more at home than a vulture in Calcutta.
Patsy, you're just in time to celebrate my return to health. Something mild for Mr. Novak. A double stinger, perhaps.
No, forget it, Jocko. I gotta talk to you.
Patsy, I've just passed through a crisis.
Yeah.
A few minutes ago, they set before me a glass with a woman's lipstick all around the rim.
All right, Jocko.
I took one gulp and looked at the glass, and in this dim light, I thought I was bleeding to death. It took them 10 minutes and 3 mirrors to calm me down.
Jocko, I'm in trouble. You gotta help me.
No, but they washed the glass for me in ammonia. They must have left a little ammonia in the glass because the next drink had a very odd tang about it. I've had 3 more just like it. A sort of ammonia colony.
All right.
So far, they've been using domestic ammonia. When the imported stuff comes in, I may give up whiskey altogether.
Calm down, will you, Jocko? I got a bum shake tonight.
Yes? Yeah?
I either killed a guy or I thought I did.
Well, that uses up the alternatives. What are you doing now, taking a vote?
I got hired to scare a guy down on Folsom Street. 10 minutes later, the guy was dead.
Oh, Patsy, you take your work too seriously. Couldn't you have just scared him into a lingering illness instead of killing him?
One of the props was an empty gun. Only when the fight came, it grew bullets. Hellman walked in right after on a telephone tip.
What are you doing out of the electric chair?
Oh, the whole thing backfired down at headquarters. The bullet and the phony gun wouldn't match. Oh, Jocko, it doesn't add up. The call to Hellman's a tip-off. I was framed, but why wasn't I framed all the way?
Well, who is the dead man?
It's a guy with a falling blood count. His name was supposed to be Dixie Gillian, but there's no identification and no record on him.
Well, you shouldn't have hired out as a gunsel.
I told you I didn't hire out as a gunsel. It was somebody else's idea.
Oh, you have no conscience, Patsy. Just a sort of soap opera rule of thumb you put into practice now and then, but no real conscience. You'd let a dying woman lie in the middle of the highway. Unless her head was resting on a pile of war bonds.
All right, Jocko, I'll cry with you later. I need help now.
Well, what sort of help?
I want you to break into a girl's apartment.
Yes?
Don't worry, she won't be home.
Oh, is that supposed to be an incentive?
Here, it's at this address up on O'Farrell. Her name is Lee Underwood. She's the one who hired me.
Well, if the girl's not there, what am I supposed to find?
Anything that'll connect her with the dead man. He's a big guy with a scar.
That doesn't help much.
You can't miss. Go through the desk and the drawers. Pick up everything you can. Leave a message at my place, huh?
Well, as soon as I finish this drink.
Hurry up, will you, Jocko? Leave the glass alone and get going.
Don't rush me.
Hurry up. The glass is empty anyway.
Yeah, that's what you thought about the gun, but the fellow got an awful jolt out of it. Good night, lover.
I went by a horse parlor on O'Farrell Street and borrowed a car from a guy. It was after midnight when I started down the Bayshore Highway, and about a half hour later I pulled up in front of the Cat's Paw. It was a long, rambling place on the left side of the road. No, there was no plan. It just followed the erosion line until they ran out of material. There was enough neon in front to light a main intersection in heaven. I asked a 50-year-old busboy, and he said Lee Underwood was back in her dressing room getting ready for the 1 o'clock show. When I walked in, she was sitting in front of a mirror, working on an upswept hairdo. She swept it up any more, it was going to leave her head. I stood behind her, looking at the pink, fresh part of her neck that didn't show when her hair was down.
You seem fascinated, Patsy.
No. I just want to know where to break it.
Oh? Sit down on the footstool here next to me. That's it. I like to look down on people. Here, let me brush that strand of hair back. Or do you like it in your eyes?
Brush it back so I can see your answers. Who's Dixie Gillian?
What difference does it make?
None to him and some to me. He's dead.
No. No, he couldn't be dead.
He'd like to believe that, too. I couldn't sell him that story about an empty gun.
He couldn't have been killed with that gun.
No?
No, I put in a blank, Patsy.
Somebody used a hard-working bullet because Dixie's dead.
There was no reason to kill him. I don't understand.
That makes you even with homicide, but they got a bigger team.
I don't understand it, Patsy.
Who's Dixie Gillian?
He was after some microfilm. I thought I could scare him away.
You better be ready to identify him because homicide stopped. Even the scar didn't help.
What scar?
Scar across his face. There's no record on him.
Oh, no, no, Patsy. Everything goes wrong. Everything you touch goes wrong. That's the wrong man, Patsy.
Yeah. Well, it's too late for a recount.
You've got to get to that body, Patsy. I don't know how, but some way you've got to get to him.
You look good, Lee. You'll make a nice picture.
Wait a minute, Dixie.
You don't need your coat. Come on.
I don't know how it happened, Dixie. I didn't mean it that way.
If you like it that way, all right. Bring your boyfriend, too.
No, don't let him, Patsy.
Oh, that gun's too big. I'm going with him. It was a short trip. He led us out of the dressing room and down a thin hall to the back door. On the way past the kitchen, you could smell onions and used grease, and that's all you noticed, except the sound of a jukebox somewhere out in front, and someone laughing in a loud, mirthless way. When we got to the door, it was raining outside. We walked about 40 feet over near some trees where the dark was working overtime, and the gunsel made her stop. And that's where it happened. She's going to get wet, mister.
You'll have a little trouble yourself.
When I woke up, it was still raining, and I was lying on top of the mud like a stubborn seed. My wallet was gone, and the gunsel had ripped open my pockets. I stood up, and I walked over for a last look at Lee. The rain had washed the makeup off her face, and she looked small and tired as she lay there, like a broken doll that had been tossed out in the rain. I guess she was. I got to the car, and I drove back to town. I checked my place, but there was no word from Jocko, so I went up to Lee's apartment. When I opened the door, the room was dark, but I knew someone was on the floor. Either that or they'd varnished the floor with bourbon. I flipped on the light and bent over Jocko. Wake up, Jocko. Come on. All right, Jocko, wake up.
Oh, a little ammonia. A little ammonia, I think, would bring me around.
What happened?
I was sapped, I guess.
Yeah, everybody's got the same act tonight.
Help me up.
All right, come on.
Where have you been?
I went down to meet the girl.
Huh? Where'd you meet her, in the swimming pool?
I've been in the rain all night. She's going to stay longer. What'd you find out?
The fellow with the scar is her husband.
Yeah?
There's a picture in the desk.
Are there any more pictures?
Oh, a few. Take a look.
Where, in here?
Yes.
Well, well.
Who is he?
Must be Dixie Gillian. He was down to pay off a debt tonight. She called him Dixie once.
There's a note with that name and address in the other drawer.
He's our boy. We better get up there.
Not if he's already killed two other people.
We can't wait for Hellman. If he gets away, I'm all through. I won't have a leg to stand on.
That's my point. When the other fellow gets through with us, we won't have much standing to do.
I felt better now. Gillian was the only guy left in the picture, so I dragged Jocko up to his place. It was an apartment on Post Street. The elevator operator took us to the 8th floor and said that Gillian had come in a few minutes before. There was no answer, so we tried the door and it was open. Jocko didn't like the idea.
Oh, Patsy, this is folly. Risking my life is one of the bravest things you do.
Keep still, Jocko. What are we supposed to do? The door was open, wasn't it?
So are a lot of graves, but I've never been tempted.
Hey, look at the furniture. There's been a fight here. I'll look in here. You check in the bedroom.
If I'm not right back, don't expect me at all.
Yeah.
Patsy! Patsy, come here!
Yeah?
There's somebody on the fire escape.
Stand back here.
He's not moving. He was leaning that way when I first saw him.
I'll get on this side. You raise the window. Go easy, Jocko. Can you see him from there?
Raise it a little more.
Yeah.
He's still leaning there. I can reach out.
Now watch yourself. If he's kidding, you'll lose an arm.
I've got him. Raise the window more.
Yeah.
Oh, Patsy, he's falling. Give me a hand.
Oh, here, let me through there.
Oh, it's too late. I can't hold him. He's falling. I'm sorry.
Yeah. He was probably dead anyway.
If he wasn't, that was a step in the right direction.
Oh, it was an easy night to die. Three of them had checked out already, and there was still time to look for more. Jocko and I went downstairs to see the guy. He was lying face down in the alley, and as you looked at him, you got the funny feeling he belonged there. He didn't disturb the scene. He just fitted in, like a dirty, wet newspaper under a grandstand. There was a gun in his pocket, probably the same one that killed the girl, but there was no way of knowing. Jocko and I watched him for a moment, but your eyes begin to hurt when you see your only warm lead in a deep freeze. Well, it was past 2 when I got down to headquarters and I looked up Hellman. I briefed him on the girl and the guy in the alley, and then I asked him if any microfilm had turned up on the first guy in the morgue. It was a waste of time. Hellman couldn't find a brass ring in a dead man's nose, but we went over to the morgue for another look. So far, it was working out like a crossword puzzle torn in half.
It's your time, Novak. I got more after tomorrow. You haven't.
The microfilm must be on the guy. 3 people have been killed for it, and I got roughed up just for laughs.
We searched the guy once. Here it is. Help me roll it out.
Yeah. Well, well. He sure got thin under that sheet, didn't he?
Wait a minute.
Oh, you run a good morgue, Hellman. What'll the papers say when they hear the stiff got up and walked out?
They got him in the wrong place or something. He didn't walk out.
He's gone, Hellman. Have you got an answer?
He's been moved, I tell you. The guy was dead and I saw him put him here. He couldn't be walking around with a hole in the middle of his back.
Oh, I don't know, Hellman. You can do it with one in your head. Don't sell the guy short.
We'll return to Pat Novak in a moment.
Cinderella lost a shoe, and so she got a mate. With lovely shoes a girl can't lose, in gallon can't you rate.
What girl hasn't dreamed Cinderella dreams of her own and wished for a fairy godmother to make those dreams come true? Here's what the newest Cinderella, Marilyn Buford, Miss America, says.
The modern girl doesn't waste time dreaming. She makes her dreams come true, and she needs no fairy godmother to give her lovely shoes. She doesn't, that is, if she has discovered my favorite shoe store, Gallon Camp.
Yes, Marilyn, for gracefully lovely shoes, flattering and in the latest fashions, wise girls go to Gallon Camps. Gallon Camps are shoe style leaders.
And so amazingly priced, a girl can afford to have all the shoes she needs.
And here's extra good news of a special Thanksgiving shoe sale. Yes, prices are actually going down on many of the up-to-the-minute shoe styles tomorrow at Gallon Camps. So shop this sale at the Gallon Camp store near you tomorrow to step assured into the exciting holiday activities ahead. Look lovely in Gallon Camps.
Cinderella lost a shoe, and so she got a mate. With lovely shoes a girl can't lose, in Gallon Camp she'll rate.
And now back to Pat Novak.
When Hellman found out the body was gone, he stood there and stared at the empty slab. And then he started looking around in a nervous way, like a man trying to find the sugar bowl at a restaurant counter. A few moments later, he turned and walked out of the morgue, and we were halfway downtown when it happened. It must have hit us at the same time, sharp and quick, like a piece of candy in a bad tooth. That guy back in the alley had come off that slab in the morgue. We got out to Dixie's place and we began to check. There was a phone operator downstairs and she said Dixie had put through a call about 2 hours ago. Hellman checked the number and it was the ticket office of a railroad. We got downtown and we ran through the timetable. There was a train leaving the Oakland Mole in 40 minutes. Oh, it was an outside chance, but tonight that was the only kind for sale. I got down in time to slide on the last ferry over to the Mole. It was still dark out when the ferry pulled away from the slip and started across the bay. Over toward the Berkeley Hills, it was beginning to get light. The sky was the color of a bruise spot on a man's arm.
We'll get up to the pilot house and tell him not to dock until we've gone through all the passengers.
He doesn't have to be in on this one.
He'll check the train when he gets there.
Wait a minute. You don't have to check. There's your boy.
Where?
Up there, on the rail. Now, you better go easy. He's not a scale model.
Just walk quietly until we're behind him.
Yeah.
Turn around, mister. He'll get a better view.
Hmm? Oh. Well, hello, Novak. How was the wind and the rain in your hair?
Meet Inspector Hellman. You better turn in your ticket.
Well, I hope you brought your muscle.
Grab it, Hellman.
That's what I'm trying to do.
All right, copper.
Watch it. I'm being pushed over on the rail.
Yeah, I'm worried, Hellman.
Watch it, Novak. I'm going over. Novak!
That's one down, mister. Now for you.
Yeah.
Well, I landed on the deck, and I watched him disappear in the dark. Halfway down, the guy turned in. I followed him down the ladder along the main deck. He ducked into one of the engine spaces, and I started in to look for him. Oh, it didn't take long, because he turned out to be helpful.
You got the idea yet, Novak?
I'll come closer. Tell me then, huh?
Suit yourself, but I'll knock you down hard when you show.
Hey, watch that platform. You're backing into trouble.
Stay back there, Novak.
Watch out for that platform. You're backing into that engine. Look out!
No! No! Oh!
I kind of wound up last, huh?
Yeah. That's the way it looks. Did you get the microfilm?
Yeah. Oh, I got a big hurt. Does it show?
A little.
Yeah. It's been a long night, Novak, huh?
Yeah. But your worries are over. It's almost dawn.
I don't know. I don't know if I can use it, but I'll give it to you.
Well, they fished Hellman out of an oil slick a few minutes later. It was the first time his hair ever looked good. Dixie Gillian lasted long enough to piece the story together for homicide. Lee Underwood was on the level. She knew her husband was carrying microfilm and was worried, so she hired me to scare off Gillian. It might have worked, too, because Adrian was too big for Gillian to argue with. But the first slip came when Lee's husband went by to make a deal with Dixie without telling her. Well, when I jumped him, Dixie was outside and figured it was a double cross. He didn't have time to figure it, but he killed him with a silencer when Lee's phony gun went off. Well, he spent the rest of the time looking for the microfilm. That's why Jocko got sapped and the girl got hers. And by that time, Dixie knew the microfilm was still on the dead man. The only way he could be sure was to get the body out of the morgue. He took it up to his apartment, and when he got the film, he planted the gun and put the body on the fire escape. It was safer that way. There was a 50-50 chance the police would miss it the first time around, and he'd have a fair lead. It almost worked out for him, except for that phone call. The microfilm? Well, it was in a capsule next to the roof of the guy's mouth. Yeah, so old it was new again. Well, Hellman asked only one question. In that fight, did I have anything to do with pushing him against the rail? I told him. Sometimes those ferry boats roll as much as 45 degrees.
Be sure to join us next Sunday evening and every Sunday, same time, same station, for radio's newest show, Pat Novak for Hire. And don't forget, the store with the yellow front is the Gallon Cap Shoe Store. Gallon Cap Shoes are good shoes. There's something about them you'll like. Franklin Evans speaking. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.